The first paper is by Johnston et al., Monarch E., Primary Overall Survival Results of Adjuvant Abemaciclib plus Endocrine Therapy for Hormone Receptor Positive HER2 Negative High-Risk Early Breast Cancer, ESMO 2025, Abstract LBA 13.
Monarch E was adjuvant abemaciclib trial that compared 3 years of adjuvant abemaciclib with endocrine therapy to endocrine therapy alone. And the data from this trial led to the approval of adjuvant abemaciclib a little over 3 years ago now. At ESMO this year, we saw 7-year follow-up data that included now the survival analysis with maturity and survival events. We've all seen the IDFS and distant recurrence-free survival data from this trial at 5 years, and the curves at that point continue to separate. So now we also see at almost 7 years of follow-up that there is improvement in survival, a reduction by about 16%. So a fairly modest reduction, but nonetheless, a statistically significant improvement in overall survival, an absolute improvement of about 1.8%. So Monarch E is the first trial to show the overall survival. Natalie, which is a little bit behind in its follow-up compared to Monarch E, also had the 5-year data at ESMO this year. But this reinforces our current practice of recommending adjuvant abemaciclib to patients who would have qualified for this study. The study required high clinical risk to participate. Patients either had to have node-positive disease or had to have node-positive disease, 1 to 3 nodes and some high-risk features, or N2 disease, so fairly high-risk disease. Natalie, on the other hand, allowed to enroll some low-risk patients as well. The question is, I think with longer follow-up, we need to see that the benefit continues, right, that it doesn't erode over time, that the curves don't come back together at 7, 8, 9 years where we start seeing some of the late recurrences.
So now we have overall survival benefit for abemaciclib, but so far not with ribociclib. Does this affect your decision in terms of patients who are eligible for both?
Some of the decisions are based on toxicity, abemaciclib, more GI toxicity and diarrhea, ribociclib, you know, you have to monitor the EKGs and some liver toxicity. So patients who've had any one of these issues with their prior chemotherapy that kind of self-declare as to which drug you would choose. The duration matters. Also, for patients that are eligible for both of the drugs, I found ribo to be a little bit more tolerable. The GI tox can get to be an issue, even if we do dose escalation for patients. I mean, in clinical real-world scenarios, we do switch patients between two drugs, too. You start with one, they don't tolerate it, and then you have to go to the other one instead of abandoning the whole strategy.
One of the differences you see here is that ribo is for 3 years. Does that affect, I mean, is that what you do? If you're going to give ribo, you give for 3 years, abema 2 years, and does that affect the decision?
Yes, we follow what the trials did. And the duration is obviously one of the considerations for patients. Sure, so is tolerability, right? Like, if you can't tolerate a drug, you won't tolerate it for 2 years. And if you're tolerating it, you'll tolerate it for 3 years. And I have to say the duration was kind of arbitrarily picked in both of these trials. So whether 3 is needed for ribo, we're not sure. And whether, you know, 3 of abema instead of 2 would have been better, again, longer follow-up will tell us. We hope all of these drugs will go generic in the next few years, and that should certainly help the cost.
The next paper is by Loibel et al., Durvalumab in combination with neoadjuvant chemotherapy in early triple-negative breast cancer. Long-term analysis from the Jepar Nuevo trial, ESMO 2025, Abstract 292-M0.
Jepar Nuevo was a phase 2 trial that looked at durvalumab plus anthracycline-based chemotherapy versus anthracycline-based and neoadjuvant chemotherapy for patients with triple-negative breast cancer. The trial did not include any adjuvant IO. So all the durvalumab was given preoperatively for 8 cycles. The primary endpoint was PCR, and we've seen those results presented and published. We've also seen the main secondary endpoints of IDFS and DDFS at 3-year follow-up. And what we saw at this ESMO was longer-term follow-up. This is now over 5 years of follow-up, showing that the benefit in the durvalumab compared to the placebo arm for invasive disease-free survival is continued to be seen at 6 years and at 7 years of follow-up. Again, the unique thing about this study is no adjuvant IO therapy was given. It's a phase two trial, so not something that led to approval of the drug, but again, brings to question the benefit of adjuvant part of IO that has now become standard of care based on KEYNOTE-522 study.
Are you generally continuing with adjuvant therapy in patients who have a past CR?
So those that have past CR, they're optimal candidates to enroll on optimized PCR trial, which is looking at that question. If the patient is not eligible for the trial, does not want to participate in the trial, then I'm recommending it. But, you know, any reason to discontinue will discontinue. A lot of patients will not elect not to take it. Because honestly, after a PCR, I'm not sure that we're doing them much benefit by exposing them to drugs with toxicity.
The next three papers are Cortez et al., primary results from ASCENT-03, a randomized phase 3 study of sacituzumab govitecan versus chemotherapy in patients with previously untreated advanced triple-negative breast cancer who are unable to receive PD-L1 inhibitors, ESMO 2025, abstract LBA 20, and Diazambuja et al., patient-reported outcomes with sacituzumab govitecan plus pembrolizumab versus chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab in patients with previously untreated PD-L1 positive metastatic triple-negative breast cancer in the Phase 3 ASCENT-04 KEYNOTE-D19 study, ESMO 2025, abstract LBA 22, and Dent et al., first-line datopotamab deruxtecan versus chemotherapy in patients with locally recurrent, inoperable, or metastatic triple-negative breast cancer for whom immunotherapy was not an option. Primary results from the randomized Phase 3 TROPION-Breast02 trial, ESMO 2025, abstract LBA 21.
ASCENT-03 was a phase 3 trial that compared chemotherapy of physician's choice to sacituzumab in first-line setting for patients with triple-negative breast cancer that either had PD-L1 negative disease or had PD-L1 positive disease but were not eligible for PD-L1 inhibitor because of any reason. The patients had to be more than 6 months from their curative treatment before they developed metastatic disease, and previously treated CNS metastases were allowed. The primary endpoint was progression-free survival. And sacituzumab led to improvement in progression-free survival compared to treatment of physician's choice, a little under 3 month improvement in progression-free survival with sacituzumab. The majority of the patients that enrolled had PD-L1 negative disease. Less than 1% had PD-L1 positive disease. So generally a PD-L1 negative patient trial. The side effect profile of SG was what we know it to be. You know, the major issues are cytopenias, GI toxicity. The chemotherapy that the patients received as part of standard for this study were either a taxane paclitaxel or nab-paclitaxel or a doublet of carbogem. And no surprises for AE comparison between the two arms. Again, this is in parallel with what we saw with ASCENT-04, with the ADC being better than the chemotherapy of physician's choice. TROPION-Breast02, again, a randomized phase 3 trial for patients with either PD-L1 negative disease or PD-L1 not candidates for checkpoint inhibitor therapy, compared Dato-DX, another TROP2 ADC with chemotherapy of physician's choice. The difference in chemotherapy of physician's choice in this trial is only single-agent chemotherapy drugs were allowed, either of the two taxanes or gemcitabine or capecitabine. This trial also showed improvement in a PFS with Dato-DXd compared to chemotherapy of physician's choice, about a little over 5 month improvement in PFS here, and also showed improvement in overall survival. It was a modest improvement in overall survival, but did show improvement in overall survival. I think the difference between this and the ASCENT-03 is ASCENT-03 allowed crossover to sacituzumab for patients in the chemotherapy alone arm at the time of progression, and among patients who had progressed and needed subsequent line therapy, about 80%, a little over 80% of them received sacituzumab. So that definitely impacts the overall survival analysis. TROPION-Breast02 did not build a mandated crossover for patients in the control arm, and for patients who progressed in the control arm, I think there was some data presented that about a third had received some ADC. Again, majority of enrollment for both of these trials occurred in parts of the world where ADCs are not going to be otherwise available as standard of care unless the trial provided it as part of crossover. The toxicity for Dato-DX compared to chemotherapy physician's choice, again, no surprises there. We know that the eye toxicity and oral toxicity is one of the major, are a few major things for Dato-DXd, and the dose interruptions and reductions were seen because of those two toxicities in the Dato-DXd arm. Dato-DXd does require patients to have a baseline eye exam and intermittent eye exams while being on the drug. For the stomatitis, there's many things that are recommended, including putting ice in mouth during infusion, mouthwashes, and other types of instructions. The ILD rates were very low with Dato-DXd, but nonetheless there. So it does require some vigilance for ILD.
We've talked about the ASCENT-04 study presented at ASCO, looking at sacituzumab with pembro and patients eligible to get immunotherapy. These were some patient-reported outcomes from this study in triple-negative disease. Anything else you want to say about this study and these findings?
So I think the patient-reported outcomes essentially told us that the two approaches was quite similar in terms of the majority of the endpoints that they looked at in patient-reported outcomes. There were increase in reported symptoms related to GI tract, you know, with SG compared to treatment of physician's choice, which is expected, like nausea, diarrhea, and other things. But overall, SG was not any worse for the patient-reported outcome metrics that were evaluated in this trial, despite the fact that the patient stayed on the drug much longer than they did on treatment of physician's choice. So that does tell us it's a tolerable drug. It is a very tolerable drug once you get like a routine going. I have a person on it that's on it for almost 5 years now. So once you figure out how you're going to give it and the appropriate dose and the growth factor and everything, then it's a very tolerable drug.
It's kind of looking like we're evolving all of a sudden in triple negative into a situation that's kind of, at least to me, it looks pretty similar to ER positive, where you have two TROP2 ADCs that seem like, from my point of view, it looks like they're kind of similar efficacy indirectly. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your thoughts mm-hmm. are, but different tolerability issues and also different schedule of treatment in terms mm-hmm. of coming to the office. So mm-hmm. how are you making that decision in ER-positive disease, and what is this data in triple-negative? Does it seem similar?
Yeah, so, you know, one thing about SG is we already have it approved in second-line and beyond. So based on this data, some patients are probably going to start getting it in first-line setting. And yes, to me also, they look comparable. The lack of crossover is going to probably dictate whether we see survival advantage in one and not in the other. The schedule and our ability to manage the side effects are going to be the major things, right? And what type of ancillary services we have access to. Do I have an access to an ophthalmologist? Does the patient have an access to an ophthalmologist to go get these visits? You know, how bothersome is the stomatitis versus how bothersome is the diarrhea? I have to say that SG we've been using for quite some time, so we've kind of gotten used to how to manage the toxicities, the cytopenias. We manage with all chemotherapies, so as oncologists, I think we're fairly good at managing those. And so is the diarrhea. The eye toxicity is something new for us, so we'll have to it'll be a learning curve for those that haven't used this drug before. But it's nice to have options, nice to have more than one option for first-line setting.
Can you contrast the schedule for the two agents? And also, your point about ophthalmologists, I've heard people say that you don't necessarily need to send the patient to an ophthalmologist to get Dato-DXd, you know, tell them to take eye drops, and if they have a problem, send them. But I don't know if everybody agrees with that. I've heard it's not that much of a problem.
The trial required it. The trial required patients to have a baseline exam, including a slit like lymph exam and like a very extensive exam. And then every 6 weeks for the first few months and then every 3 months afterwards. And then you can't wear contact lenses if you have even a grade one eye issue, which, you know, for those that wear contact lenses might be a might be a challenge, right? So I usually try to send my patients to get evaluated so that we can be proactive about preventing some of these eye toxicities as opposed to be reactive after the patient has some eye toxicity. Again, if you don't have access or the patient doesn't have access, then you have to make a judgment call. The schedule certainly, you know, 2 times in 3 weeks versus 1 in 3 weeks is going to dictate the preference for many patients to come in or not. Stomatitis, if it doesn't occur, that's great. But if it occurs for some patients, it's quite a bit. Like that's just something that they don't want to live with. And so is diarrhea. Like if with SG, if you have diarrhea, then that can be a problem. So I think we just, it's going to be patient specific and what they've had before. If somebody's had any ILD with any drug before, even though the rates of ILD are a little bit lower with Dato, I might feel more comfortable with SG, whereas somebody else who's had diarrhea with many other drugs before, then, you know, Dato DXD might be a better choice for that person.